Now, Torah speaks about the building of the first base HaMikdash, which is obviously connected to the Sedra, which speaks about the mitzvah to build the Mishkan. However, Rav Mendel Hirsch, that's the son of Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, he has a sefer on the Haftorah. That the commentary of Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch on the Torah has a seventh volume. The seventh volume is on the Haftorah, but it's not by Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, by Rav Mendel Hirsch. And in there, he makes a comment which I'm not 100% sure I agree with. Okay, and I'm going to tell you a different interpretation of what he points out. He points out that even though there's a tremendous similarity between the Sedra and the Haftorah, meaning the building of the Mishkan and the building of the Mikdash, but there's a very big difference. The building of the Mishkan, it says, the Yikuli Truma Me'eis Kolisha Shidvenu Liva, that the Mikdash, the Mishkan, was built by voluntary contributions to the Mishkan. Me'eis Kolisha Shidvenu Liva, anyone whose heart so moved him to donate it. On the other hand, the Beit HaMikdash, it says the following, Bayal HaMelech Shlomo Mas Mikol Yisrael, Shlomo imposed a tax. This wasn't a monetary tax. This was a tax of workers. By Yehi Hamas, Shloshim Elatis, 30,000 people. The 30,000 people were taken by Shlomo HaMelech for forced labor. And in fact, it says, by Yishlachem Levanona, he sent them to Lebanon, Aseres Alafim Bachodesh, Chalifos Chodesh Yu Bavonon, Shnayim Chadoshim Veso, sent 10,000 at a time, and they went in shifts. 1 month they were working in Lebanon, and 2 months they were home, and then they went back to Lebanon for another month, and so on. And says that he had 300 harodim ba'am ha'osim b'malacha, and he had 300 taskmasters to force the people or to make sure to supervise the fact that they were working. So Mendel Hirsch points out this tremendous difference that the Mishkan was built with voluntary contributions. And here, Shlomo HaMelech decided to build the Mikdash with forced labor that's reminiscent of the Yeshivut Mitzrayim, of the slavery in Egypt. Okay, the truth is that even the Mishkan, where it says, Me'esh Kualish HaShidvenu Libo, Chazal learned, Tikhu es Tumasi against the willing. There was a certain amount of force eaten by the Mishkan, right? And in fact, there were certain contributions that everybody had to give, the half shekel. Everybody had to give equally. Then, in addition to that, people could give generously according to what they had, other materials. But the silver was taken equally from everybody, half shekel, and they had to give it. So therefore, it says, the yikhuli truma means take it, seemingly by force. Then it says, ashir ben libo, they should give it willingly, and then again it says tikhuas tumasi, take. And some of them first you learn, one, the yikhuli truma is everybody has to give that half shekel. Then people can donate and volunteer to give what they other materials they have, but once they volunteer, take it from them. And even if they renege or whatever, you take it from them. So it's the truth is that even in the building of the Mishkan there was a certain amount of force also. But I want to explain why that was the case. Why Shlomo HaMelech, to a certain degree, forced the people to be involved in building the Beit HaMikdash, and why when it came to the Mishkan, it was more done voluntarily. There was a reason for it, because of the difference between the Mishkan and the Mikdash. And let me first describe the idea of the Mishkan, and then we'll see where the Mikdash differed, and then we'll see maybe why one was built totally or a good portion of it was built voluntarily, and the other was built predominantly by force. The Mishkan, first of all, what is it doing in Sefer Shmos? Why is the building of the Mishkan in Sefer Shmos. Sefer Shmos is Sefer HaGeula. It's the book of redemption. Now, redemption ended, l'cha'ora, by the giving of the Torah. Because there are four expressions of redemption, Arba L'shonos Shel Geula, and the last one was, V'lokachti Eschem Li La'am, I will take you to be my people. And that, the commentaries say, was right at the giving of the Torah. That's when God took us to be his people. So, really, Sefer Shmos should have ended with Parshas Yitro. The truth is that it extends to Parshas Mishpatim, because if there's time, we'll see that Parshas Mishpatim continued the Torah on, not only to the Ten Commandments, but to the full gamut of laws that have to do with society, and that made the Torah a real thing, brought the Torah down to the people. In Parshas Yitro, it's God speaking from on top of the mountain, and here the Torah now goes into society. So the continuation, the completion of the giving of the Torah was Parshas Mishpatim. And in fact, the continuation of the giving of the Torah and the description of the Jewish people accepting the Torah is in Parshas Mishpatim, not the Vinishma. Famous not the Vinishma is in Parshas Mishpatim, not in Parshas Yitro. So fine. So therefore, Shmos should have ended at the end of Parshas Mishpatim. Now, Sefer Vayikra is Torah's Kohanim. Sefer Vayikra is the book of the Kohanim. And in order to have Kohanim serving in the Mishkan, you have to have a Mishkan. So it would seem more logical to have the Parshiot of Truma, Till, Vayakel Tekude as the beginning of Sefer Vayikra, Torah's Kohanim, than as the end of Sefer Shmos, Sefer HaGeula. So why is it in the end of Shmos? So the Ramban says a reason. I'm going to give you another reason that my Rosh Hashiva always said. And really the two reasons are very close to each other, but not exact. The Ramban says that the full Geula, the full redemption, did not occur even when the Torah was given until there's another expression after V'lakachti Eschem Li La'am, V'hayithi Lachem L'Elokim, and I will be your God. Until God's presence descended amongst the Jewish people on a permanent basis, right, close, permanent basis, where the cloud of God rested on the Mishkan amongst the Jewish people, they didn't return to the original level that the Avos had. And until they returned to that original level of closeness to God, they weren't fully redeemed. Redemption means they reach your full potential. And that potential was achieved during the time of the Avos. We know that the cloud of God's glory rested on Sara Imenu's tent, just like on the Mishkan. God's presence was constantly over our forefathers. And therefore, they didn't return to that tremendous level of closeness to God until the Mishkan was built and God's presence descended. So therefore, the full Geula, the full redemption, wasn't completed until the Mishkan was erected. Therefore, as the end of Sefer HaGeula, the end of the book of redemption, is the parsha of the building of the Mishkan. That's what the Ramban says. By Rosh Hashiva, Rabbi Gifter, based on various sources, said another idea of what the Mishkan really was, and then you can understand why it is in the book of Geula. There's an interesting fact that when God gave the Torah on Har Sinai, Har Sinai became sanctified. And if anybody touched it, they'd be liable to a death penalty. Yet, when God's presence left Har Sinai, and he no longer was giving the Torah, Har Sinai became a regular mountain again, and anybody can go up there with their animals and graze there. The Torah says it specifically. Dimshoh Hayovel, Hema Yalu Bahar. After the shofar blows to signify the end of the giving of the Torah, animals, people, anybody can come up to Har Sinai, whoever wants to come. It lost its holiness. God's presence also descended on another mountain, Hara Moriah. And yet that mountain became holy forever. Even when there's no Beit HaMikdash there, God's presence is still there, and therefore it's holy. Now, the basic idea is that God's presence left Har Sinai, that God's presence never left Har HaMoriah. And therefore, even though the Beit HaMikdash is not there, God's presence is still there. Specifically by the Kosel HaMaravi, it says. God's presence never left the Kosel HaMaravi, which we'll discuss in a few minutes, why Dafka there. What's the idea? The idea is that the Torah only began to be given on Har Sinai. That was only the beginning of the giving of the Torah. The Torah then had to be continued to be given throughout the 40 years in the desert, and even beyond that, because the Torah is an ongoing thing. The Torah itself was ended, right, Le'enei Kol Yisrael, at the end of the 40 years in the desert. But then started the period of the prophets. And they added, didn't add to the Torah mitzvahs-wise, but they added to God's revelation to us through the prophets and through the Ksuvim. And then the Sanhedrin added Torah Shebaal Peh. Not that they made it up, but it continued on with the teaching of the Torah from the Sanhedrin. Now, where was the Torah continued to be given after Har Sinai? So where did God speak to Moshe Rabbeinu from after he stopped speaking to him from the top of Mount Sinai? In the Mishkan. Midain Shnei HaKruvim, between the two Kruvim on top of the Aron, that's where God spoke to Moshe. And therefore, the giving of the Torah continued on in the Mishkan. God's presence descended from Mount Sinai, and instead of being on the top of the mountain, it was on top of the Aron in the Mishkan. So the Mishkan became the continuation of Maimon Har Sinai, became the continuation of the giving of the Torah from Mount Sinai now into the Mishkan. After that, after the Mishkan, we gave it to Eretz Yisrael, the Beis HaMikdash was built. Where did God speak to the Nevi'im from? Where did the Navi, through what medium? Where was the broadcast station for the Navi? In the Beis HaMikdash. Every Navi got his prophecy. The prophecy originally was given at Har Sinai, but it was broadcast to the Navi from Kodesh HaKadosh, from the Holy of Holies in the Beis HaMikdash. In the second Beis HaMikdash, when there was no more prophecy, where did the Sanhedrin sit and get their inspiration to learn Torah and to teach Torah and to decide halachic questions? From the Mikdash. The Sanhedrin sat in the Mikdash. So we have the Mikdash as being the place from which Torah emanates. And that's what it says. Ki mitzion teitzei Torah. Tzion referring to the Beis HaMikdash specifically, not Eretz Yisrael. Tzion over here means the Beit HaMikdash, as it does in Shmoneh Esrei. So we have the Tush and the Mishkan as being the place of continuation of the giving of the Torah. And therefore, you can understand why the parshios of the building of the Mishkan are in Sefer HaGeula, because we said before that the Geula wasn't complete until the Torah was given. And the giving of the Torah wasn't complete, or it wasn't able to be continued till the Mishkan was erected. It was the continuation of the giving of the Torah. So, therefore, the Torah was not continued to be given, nor completed until the Mishkan was built, and therefore the Mishkan is part and parcel of the giving of the Torah, which is part and parcel of the Geula. So we have two reasons. One is that the actual presence of God in the Mishkan was part of redemption, and the other is that the continuation of redemption, or the completion of redemption, was giving of the Torah, and the Mishkan was the place where the Torah was continued to begin. Okay. Now, this idea that the Mishkan was a continuation of Maimon Har Sinai, right, is brought out by a Me'iri. The Me'iri asks the following question. The Gemara asks the following question. Shai. How many judges do you need to judge an animal that came up to Har Sinai and was liable to a death penalty? If when God was giving the Torah on Har Sinai, an animal or a human being touched the mountain, they were liable to an earthly death penalty of stoning. Now, normally, capital cases, human beings, are judged by 23 judges, whereas monetary cases are judged by 3 judges. One exception to that is when you judge an animal that killed a human being, which has to be executed. Now, even though it's obviously a monetary case, we're not talking here about a capital case, we're talking about killing an animal, not a human being. The animal killed a human being, but you're only going to kill somebody's ox, that's monetary. You still need 23 judges. And we learn it from a pasuk. Torah says, Hashor Yisachil, the gamba all of you must. Stone the ox, and the owner also should die. And the Gemara explains, doesn't mean the owner actually dies for his ox killing somebody, but it means he has to pay ransom. Yeah, he needs a kapara. He needs to be atoned for. But since it compares the ox to the owner, just like the owner, if he would be judge, a capital case, would need 23 judges, so too the ox needs 23 judges. So now the Gemara says maybe that's the exception. That when you kill an ox because it killed a human being, there's a special law, you need 23 judges. But when you kill an ox because it touched Har Sinai, maybe you only need 3 judges. Or maybe not. Maybe it's similar to that case, you need 23 judges. That's the question. Says the Meiri, who cares? Why does the Gemara pose this question? It could never happen. Whatever happened, happened. It doesn't say in the Torah that an ox ever came up to Har Sinai when God was giving the Torah, and after the Torah was given, God's never going to give it again on Har Sinai. So this scenario can never exist. We don't ask questions of things that are so abstract that they never can be. Whatever was, was, says the Meiri. Answers the Meiri, no, this is not an abstract theoretical question. It's an actual practical question. Why? Because since the giving of the Torah continued on in the Mishkan, the same law applies. If an ox would force its way into the Holy of Holies, it would have to be stoned. And then we'd have the question, how many judges do you need? And it probably means that even in the Beit HaMikdash would be the same thing. If an ox ran into the temple, into the Holy of Holies, which is the continuation of the giving of the Torah, it's just like the continuation of Har Sinai, it would also have to be stoned, and we'd have to know the law. So it's not something that was a one-time thing in history. It's an ongoing thing because the giving of the Torah continues on in the Mishkan and later in the Mikdash. Okay. The Rambam says that there are 3 functions of the Mikdash. We'll see how it applies to these ideas that we said. We said 2 ideas, but one of them we can split into 2. We'll come out with 3 functions of the Mikdash. The first function, the Rambam says, mitzvahs asei livnos bayit l'Hashem, to build a house for God. That will discuss what that means. God doesn't need a house. So what does it mean that we have a house of God? She'elav olim shalosh panim v'shana. Second purpose of the Mikdash is that place is the place where you ascend 3 times a year to see God and be seen by Him. Mitzvahs aliyah l'regel. Right, the pilgrimages 3 times a year are done in that place where you build this house of God. That's the place that you go 3 times a year to see and be seen. And she'besocho makrivim korbanos. And in that place, you make sacrifices. So we have 3 functions. The Mikdash serves as a house of God, as a place to ascend to on Yom Tov, and a place to make sacrifices. That idea of these 3 functions can be brought out in 2 other places. I'm going to put them all together. One place is, the Gemara says, Lo kavrom shikaro har, the lo ki yitzchok shikaro soda, ela kavrom ki Yaakov shikaro bais. Both, or all Avrom, Yitzchok, and Yaakov, all prayed in the place of the Mikdash, in their time. And they all related to the Mikdash in a different way. Each one did a different way. Avram called the Makom HaMikdash Har. Har Hashem Yiroh. The mountain where God will be seen. And God sees. That's how Avram called it. A mountain. Har HaMikdash. Yitzchak, it says, Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach Vasodeh. Yitzchak went to converse in the field. He saw that the Beit HaMikdash is a field. Stay HaMikdash. Yaakov Avinu called it a bayis. Ein zekiyim beis Elokim. This is God's home. So we don't call it Har HaMikdash, nor Sdei HaMikdash. We call it Beit HaMikdash, like Yaakov Avinu. So we see 3 different ideas. There's a Har, a Sodeh, and a bayis. We'll see that they relate to the idea of sacrifices, God's home, obviously, the same thing, and the place to ascend, like the mountain. There's another connection here of 3 different functions of the Mikdash from another perspective, and then we'll put all the 3 sources together and explain these 3 functions. The third source is, it says, Shavareich k'migdal Hashem. Your neck is like the tower of ivory. The Medrash says in Shir HaShirim, it's a sentence in Shir HaShirim, that this refers to the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash is compared to the neck. Why? Because the neck is the place where life emanates from. Air, blood, and food go through the neck. The neck is not the source of life, but it's the conduit that brings the necessities of life to the body. Through the neck goes the esophagus, which brings food, the trachea, which brings air, and the veins and arteries that bring blood to the head, which makes the brain be able to function. If you cut the jugular veins or arteries or whatever in the neck, you cut off the blood supply to the brain. So we have blood, food, and air that go through the neck and bring life to the person. Now let's put all these things together. The idea, first of all, that the Rambam says, a mitzvah to build a house to God. What does that mean, God's house? Right? House is where a person is kavua. That's where he is settled. That's his house. He may go on vacation. He may stay a few days in a hotel, in the Days Inn, be traveling around the world, but when you send a letter, you don't send it to the Days Inn. You send it to his house, because that's where he is settled. That's his kavua. That's where his home base is. What a home base. That's his home. Where do we see God settled in this world? Right? That is by Torah. God's set presence in this world is where the Torah is. And therefore, the function of the Mikdash as the place from which Torah emanates, Ki Mitzion Tetzei Torah, and that's where God connects himself to the world through the Torah, that is the bias. And that's why Yaakov Avinu was the one who saw it as a bias, because Yaakov was the pillar of Torah. Yaakov represented Torah. So Yaakov's relationship to the Beit HaMikdash was the place of Torah. And therefore, that's God's home. That's why when Yaakov saw the Beit HaMikdash, he saw Sula Mutzav Arza, Verosho Magia Shemaimah. That was his vision of the Makom HaMikdash with a Sulam. And the Medrash says, Sulam Zesinai. Sulam is the same letters as Sinai, same gematria. Why? Because Yaakov Avinu perceived the Beit HaMikdash as the extension of Sinai, the extension of the place where the Torah is given. And that refers to the part of the neck where the blood goes to the brain, the seichel, God's connection to the world in an intellectual way through the Torah. Where do we see God's mind in the world? Through the Torah, and that's the function of the mikdash as the neck to bring the blood to the brain. Now that is one function, okay? And that's called bias. Then there's a second function. The second function is the har, the mountain, okay? That is one function, okay? And that's called bias. Then there's a second function. The second function is the har, the mountain. Okay? That corresponds to the same thing that the Rambam says, the mitzvah to ascend. Aliyah l'regel, you ascend the mountain, you go up the mountain, right, three times a year to be seen and to see. What do you see about God in the Beit HaMikdash? All the miracles that were there, the splendor of the Beit HaMikdash. It's more how you are inspired by the physical entity of the Mikdash and the various miracles that happened there. And that is something like a mountain. You look up to the majesty of a mountain and it impresses you with God's presence. That's how a person is impressed with God's presence from the creation itself. You're impressed with God's creation, and the Mikdash and the Mishkan were small microcosms of the universe. They were small models of the universe, the Mishkan and the Mikdash. Avram Avinu was the Amud HaChesed. Avram Avinu was the pillar of kindness. Chesed, Olam Chesed Yibana. The whole world is an expression of God's kindness, and how he deals with the world is an expression of his kindness. We recognize God, HaTov HaMeitiv. God is good and he does good. We see God's goodness and his chesed from the good things that he does in the world. So therefore, Avram Avinu related to the Mikdash as the place where you can come eye to eye with God and be scrutinized by God by coming up that mountain and being impressed with God's connection to the world, physical connection. So we have the Beit HaMikdash as the place of Torah, that's the bias. We have it as the place where you're inspired, coming face to face with God through His chesed, through His involvement in the world, through the creation. And that is what's called the Har, the mountain, and that refers to the Ruach, the air, right, that enlivens a person. Right, gives him breath to breathe and to be have a ruach, have a spirit. That spirit is represented by the mountain and Aliyah Lerech. Then there's the idea of the field. Yitzchak Avinu was the Amud, he was the pillar of Avodah, of service to God, which basically is sacrifice. So Yitzchak saw that aspect of the Beit HaMikdash as the place where you bring sacrifices. What sacrifices? Sacrifices utilizes the various things in the world and uses all the different things to manipulate the various powers of the world and to bring out these powers. So you use the inanimate objects and the mineral, the animal, the vegetable, and man utilizes the powers of the world in service of God, like a field. A field is a fertile place that if you take advantage of its fertility, you can bring out things that will grow. So Yitzchak looked at the Beit HaMikdash as a field, and that corresponds to the food that goes through the neck. That is the food, the nourishment of the body, like the nourishment of the world, the powers, the service to God, davening, karbanos, bring the various effects of God's influence to the world, and that's like food that brings the nourishment to the body. So we have those three aspects. The blood that keeps the brain alive, that goes through the neck, corresponds to the bias, to the home of God, which is the Beit HaMikdash's idea of being a place where Torah is continued. That's God's place of tzvius, His settled, permanent place in the world. Then we have what's it called, the Har, the mountain aspect, where you ascend and look up and are inspired by the grandeur of the Mikdash, like a mountain. And that is Avraham Avinu's chesed, olam chesed yibane, and that's like the spirit, the air that goes through the neck. And then we have the son of the field, Yitzchak Avinu, who is the avoda, the service, the karbanos, which is like the food that goes through the neck, and like the field where you grow and utilize its fertility. Now, the Mishkan itself was not the permanent place where Torah would be given, because the Torah was given over many, many years through the prophets, through the era of the prophets, and beyond that through the era of the Sanhedrin. So the Mishkan itself, in that aspect, wasn't a bias. It wasn't a bias, Lashem, because it wasn't his permanent address. It was only a temporary address. It was only an apartment that he lived in until his house was rebuilt. So it wasn't his permanent address. It was a forwarded address by the Mishkan. So the main aspect of the Mishkan wasn't this first idea of building a house to God. The house was only built, that was a tent. Temporary, movable. It was only a house when Shlomo HaMelech built the first Beit HaMikdash. So that aspect of the Mikdash, of being the place where the Torah would continue permanently, was not the Mishkan. So what was the main aspect? But it was temporary. It had that aspect, but not as its main aspect. The main aspect were the other two. It was the completion of redemption with God's presence once again dwelling amongst the Jewish people in two ways. One, through the sacrifices, and that's how we got close to God. And the second way was through the grandeur of the Mishkan, where we felt God's presence. But the idea of the bias, that was only a minor aspect of the Mishkan. The Beit HaMikdash was just the opposite. The Beit HaMikdash was the place where the Torah would continue forever. Ki Mitzion Tetzi, Torah applies even today. Even when there's no house, There's no building. There's a mosque. But where does the influence of Torah come from? From that spot. Okay, now, how do I know that? The Beis HaMikdash was the place where the Torah continued forever, even when there was no Beis HaMikdash like today. God's presence didn't go away from the Kosel HaMaravi. Why? There's a hint that the menorah, the light of the menorah never stopped. Even though the sacrifices stopped and the actual temple is not there, but the menorah continues on. That's a hint in Hanukkah. God told Aaron, don't be upset that you didn't have a part in the Chanukah HaMishkan, because in the sacrifices, because your part is greater, you light the menorah. And the menorah is always, even when there is no Beis HaMikdash. The hint of that is the lights of Hanukkah. But the idea of the menorah is the menorah represents the spread of God's light to the world, which is the light of Torah. Specifically Torah Shebal Peh, the oral Torah. That's what the menorah represents. And that power for rabbis world over to learn and teach Torah comes from the Makom HaMikdash. Now, which of the candles of the menorah represented this? Which of the candles of the menorah represented this fact that God's presence was there, disseminating Torah? The Ner HaMaravi, the western candle. Could be for that reason God's Shechina hasn't left the western wall of the Beit HaMikdash to signify this. That the western idea is that connected to that western candle, which is the dissemination of Torah to the world. So the Beit HaMikdash, on the other hand, did not have in it permanently the idea of redemption, because it was destroyed and we went into Golos. So our redemption, that idea of it being the finishing of Geula, where God's presence was always amongst us in its most intense way, with the sacrifices and with the idea of Aliyah Lorego, of coming up and being seen, that stopped in the Beit HaMikdash when it was destroyed. But the idea of the Beit HaMikdash being the place of disseminating Torah, that never stopped. So we have that the Mishkan and the Beit HaMikdash are the opposite. The Mishkan, the predominant idea of the Mishkan, was not as a place of disseminating Torah, because that stopped. But it was the place where the entire existence of the Mishkan, God's presence was there, and there was Aliyah Lerega, you could go up and be seen and see, and that existed in the Mishkan for its entire duration. But the giving of the Torah wasn't in the Mishkan on its major part, was given afterwards to the prophets and to the Torah Shebal Peh. Mashain, can hold on a second, just to finish this idea. And therefore, the Mikdash was just the opposite. The giving of the Torah continued on in the Mikdash even after it was destruction. But the idea of the finishing of Geula, of God's presence being close to the Jewish people, right, and finishing off redemption, that didn't exist in the Mikdash all the time. Okay. Therefore, you can understand something else. And that is, the Mishkan was started to be built after Yom Kippur and was completed in Nisan, the month of redemption. Why? Because the Mishkan, like we said, was only a preface to the continuation of giving the Torah. But it was more set as the place of the finishing of Geula. Tishrei, Yom Kippur specifically, is the time the Torah was actually given. Because even though God gave it on the sixth day of Sivan, but it wasn't re-given until Yom Kippur. So the fact that the Mishkan was started to be built after Yom Kippur signifies the fact that the Mishkan would be the place where the beginning of the continuation of giving the Torah would be, but not the end. It was completed, its completion was in Nisan, which represents the idea of the Geula, of the redemption, which was something that was intrinsic to the Mishkan. The Beit HaMikdash was just the opposite. The first Beit HaMikdash, Shlomo HaMelech began building it after Nisan, which means that it was the beginning of a continuation of redemption, but not the end, because it was destroyed and we went into Golus, and it finished around Yom Kippur time. Its seal, its completion, was at the time of giving of the Torah, because that was something that was permanent in the Beit HaMikdash, the giving of the Torah, even after its destruction. Now, if that's the case, it comes out that the major aspect of the Beit HaMikdash was the aspect of Torah of the Mikdash, the Bayis, Beis HaMikdash, and the main aspects of the Mishkan were the other two, the Har, the inspiration, and the sacrifice, but not the Torah. That wasn't the main aspect. It comes out like this. When we talk about redemption, so that is a voluntary kind of thing. That's a person using his free choice to subjugate himself to God. God redeems us from slavery. We're not slaves, we're free people. And we exercise our free choice to be God's slave. But that's Yevzen Uliva. So the Mishkan was built predominantly with free choice. The Mikdash, on the other hand, is Torah. Torah is not something we have a choice. God forced us to get the Torah. If we didn't accept the Torah, we couldn't live. The Torah was given Kof Aleim Har Kegigis. God forced us to get the Torah. So the building the Mikdash, whose predominant aspect was the Torah, had to be built by force. Building the Mishkan, whose predominant aspect was Geula, was redemption, was built by voluntary, predominantly by voluntary, what's it called? So not as Rav Mendel Hirsch said, it's something negative that Shlomo HaMelech reverted back to slavery to build the Beit HaMikdash. It was because of the nature of the difference between the Mishkan and the Mikdash that the Mishkan was predominantly built voluntarily, voluntary contributions, and the Mikdash, Shlomo HaMelech felt that he had to build this building by force to recognize the fact that the Torah is something you have no choice about. If you accept it, you're there. If you don't accept it, you're not there. You have a choice not to accept it, but the choice basically is one that is academic, because if you choose not to have the Torah, then you choose to go out of existence. That could be the reason why. Okay, it's not complete, but it's in the formation, this idea. Okay.